はい、タッチを。
Staying on our theme of new age technology, moving from cryptocurrencies to cloud computing. Handing over to Michelle.
Okay, well, we'll start with Agenda Paper 5, which looks at the customer's accounting in software as a service cloud computing arrangements. Now, the submission only asks about fees paid for the customer's right to access the supplier's software, and therefore we haven't considered other fees or costs associated with the arrangements, for example, implementation costs. Now, the submitter asks three questions, which are in paragraph 10, about how to apply the definition and scope paragraphs in IFRS 16, the leases standard, and IAS 38, the intangible standard, to these arrangements, and also how to apply the measurement requirements if the arrangements are in IAS 38. Now, we've addressed these questions in a slightly different order in the paper because we think we can quickly disregard IFRS 16. Now, an analysis is in three parts. So first, we consider if the customer's right to access the software is in the scope of IAS 38 or IFRS 16, and we explain why we think we only consider IAS 38. Now, secondly, we consider whether and when the arrangements create an intangible asset for the right of access. Now, we think for most of these arrangements, the customer doesn't have an intangible asset at inception that it controls for the right of access. Instead, it receives a right to access the software in the future over the contract period and would account for these arrangements as service contracts. However, for more complex arrangements, we note this may depend on the terms and conditions of the arrangement, and we provide some examples of indicators of where it may be more likely that the customer might have an intangible asset at inception under the arrangement, and these are provided in paragraph 40B. And finally, we have explained why we suggest the committee does not address the application of the IAS 38 measurement requirements for these arrangements. So moving to first to question one on page 19, does the committee agree with our analysis of the requirements in IFRS standards?
Okay, so for fees paid to suppliers. All right. Who has something they'd like to say?
I agree with the staff analysis and conclusions. I have a side comment. To disregard IFRS 16, I agree for IP licenses. And the analysis around whether the intangible item is an intangible asset or not, I agree also. And on all the measurements, aspects of the of the staff paper, I agree also. Where I'm really annoyed, and I share that with Michelle and Katrina, is that I think something that could enhance the analysis is BC5 of IAS 38. Mm-hmm. So BC5, the first part of BC5 is just referring to paragraph 13 of IAS 38, but then for us, at least in the media industry, the most important part is the last one. The board concluded that the purpose for which an entity holds an item with these characteristics is not relevant to its classification as an intangible asset, and that all such items should be within the scope of the standard. So it means you have an intangible item that fits the definition in 13, and then you analyze whether applying the requirements in IAS 38, the five criteria are fulfilled, so that you conclude that effectively, ultimately, you have an intangible asset to compute. And if you don't have an intangible asset, it means that generally you have you account for a working cap asset in most circumstances. And then, if you replace asset, the word asset by item in paragraph 33 of the agenda paper, I think it would be more accurate to do so at this stage of the analysis, because you have not yet concluded that you have an intangible asset. You just have an intangible item that you need to analyze. And then where I totally disagree with the but it's more, let's say, wording technical matters in the agenda decision, I would say, is paragraph 35 and the way it's reflected in the agenda decision. So the committee observed that the term underlying resource in paragraph 13 of RS 38 refers to the resource that an entity would recognize as an intangible asset. And the next sentence should go, consequently, in considering whether the right to access the software creates an intangible asset, the customer would assess whether it controls the underlying software. And not, rather than the right to access the software. All our IPs are analyzed as such. Whether you need to assess whether you have the you have the control over the master copyright of the IP. If it's the case, the intangible item is accounted for as an intangible asset. If it's not the case, it's a working cap asset. So there, I would be very cautious in the way it's worded in the agenda decision in this instance. But I agree with the conclusions of the staff in the paper.
Okay, thank you.
Apart from this.
Okay, staff, do you have any?
And I don't see why the IP of a software would be different from an IP for a film, music copyright, or whatever.
I think I'll come in. I'm looking at Michelle and Joan, who will delicately correct me when I say something wrong, and also Bertrand. I think that from what you explained and on our discussions, I think, as we said, I think your thought process is similar to our thought process, and I think there's just some, almost what I'd say, terminology is the wrong word because this is all important, so I don't want to downplay it, but I think what you're saying is when you talk about, so I think we get to the same place, we might use different words or something, is we're saying that the assessment here we're doing, and maybe I might even re-articulate some of our words, we sometimes in the paper that we're assessing whether you control the right to access. Actually, maybe importantly, it might be more about when, the timing of when you actually control something, an intangible asset in a sense. And I think, as you say, you'd agree with the outcome that in the context of the simple case where all the customer gets is a right to access the supplier's software, and potentially the software is constantly maintaining it, then we'd think that the customer is only obtaining an intangible asset resource that it's only obtaining control of the right of access at almost each day as it gets that access. And so it's almost getting control and immediately consuming it, which I think you're saying, you might use different words, but you get to the same answer. And I think if I understand when you talk about a working cap asset, I think you're thinking about the scenario when a payment has been made. So let's assume the customer has credited cash, it's paid cash. And you would say that's not the same, it's a working cap asset. And I think we would say the same thing, that in this scenario, if the customer is already paid and credited cash, yes, it has an asset, but that's not saying it has this right of access at that point. We think that that's more like a prepayment, a working cap asset, in your view, that at the point that it pays, what it has is an asset, but that asset is more a right to receive the right of access in the future.
And to say that for an IP license, really, obviously it's not in IFRS 16. I agree with you. And it's in IFRS 38 because of the intangible nature of the item. What we have noticed after having analyzed IS 38 applied to our IPs back in 24, 25 when we first transitioned to IFRS, is that the common factor among what intangible item was ultimately an intangible asset and what intangible item was not an intangible asset was really whether we were controlling the master copyright of the IP or not. So if you're controlling the master copyright of the IP, effectively you have an intangible asset, otherwise you don't. So the right to broadcast a film is not an intangible asset. It's an intangible item, but not an intangible asset, because you do not control the master copyright of the underlying IP, which is the film itself. the film. Obviously, when you have the master copyright of a film, it's an intangible asset because generally you effectively have all rights on the film. Very basically presented. So it's, but it has not.
Doesn't change the outcome.
Yeah, it doesn't change anything for the rest of the analysis and the conclusions.
Thank you, Bertrand. Martin?
Yeah, I'm fine with the analysis. So, only one comment and, or two comments. The one comment is how this is equivalent to US GAAP. That would be interesting, specifically in terms of convergence and for companies who have to and are fulfilling the two gaps in parallel. Sure, not necessarily part of the question, but always of interest. And the second thing is in paragraph 51. I guess the most important sentence is IS 38 does not specifically address separating components of a contract when an intangible asset is only one of such components. This is really very essential because all questions with regard to software and combined services to that software and so on is addressed in this specific point, and it says, well, in theory, we do not really have real guidance for that. That also, I believe, in future would lead to further questions and issues.
Okay, thank you. Bob, are you willing to answer the question on the US GAAP bit?
Sure.
sorry, Bob.
At the right or the wrong moment, depending on the point of view.
So, in US GAAP, it was ASU 2015-05 that dealt with this issue, not the current EITF issue. I can talk about that later. In that guidance, it's very similar to the analysis the staff went through here. It's largely based on, do you have the ability to take the customer?
No.
Do you have the ability to take the software and either use it in your own on your own server or give it to a third party to host it for you. If you have the ability, that control of the underlying software because you can take it, then it's considered to be a product. You have an asset. You have that software. By the way, I think it's symmetrical with the vendor's accounting. He would have transferred a product. If you cannot take it, then we consider it to be an executory transaction, a service. And by the way, also, I think it's consistent with our revenue recognition that the vendor in that case would also have a service over time. The issue that we just dealt with, which we're not getting into here at the EITF, was how to deal with all the implementation costs around
customizing
the software, you know, to make it so that you can use it.
Okay. Thank you. And Bob, did you have something you wanted to say as opposed to answering the question?
Yes. Yeah, so, a couple of observations. So on the model, and the staff did, I think, as I said, it's largely consistent with where we ended up in US GAAP. The one difference that I would point out, and I do have a question about, is there's a discussion around if there's significant configuration. Mm. I'm not sure if just, you know, I don't know if it was implied, required, whatever, that if there was a significant configuration for the customer, that became the customer's asset. Maybe that's an indicator, or maybe that's something that tells you, to, hey, I want to look harder at that. But I don't think that necessarily in and of itself says that, that the customer now has control of the underlying software and should put that on its books. So I think that's one thing to look at. The other observation I wanted to raise, and this goes way back to Shelley talked about the leases versus licenses. There's a statement in here that paragraph 3E was meant to be all licenses, not just those for those things that are mentioned, those examples that are mentioned there. I think, and I can't argue otherwise, but I think if that's the case, we need to get that out because that's not commonly understood. And the reason why I think it's not commonly understood, because if you think
about licenses, they are rights to use. That's the same as lease. Lease and license to me are synonymous. And so there's a question of, well, if all licenses are out of 16, then what was paragraph 4 meant to apply to?
Something else.
So I think we need to...
Well, for sure, licenses have nothing to do with leases. And that's why they are scoped out, I think, from IFRS 16. But I agree with you. I don't know what
I think
for
I can...
is for, but surely not for licenses.
But I think licenses and leases, they're exactly the same thing. We just use different terminology. And one's for intellectual property, one's for physical property.
Just the model is different. Really. You mentioned executory contracts for those SaaS arrangements. It's the case for IPs.
Yeah.
They work as executory contracts, really.
And
the lease model is totally the opposite.
And I'm not disagreeing with pulling licenses out of the lease model.
Let's talk about country.
But I just don't think that's understood.
Right. Good to know. Bonnie.
I had that same point. It gets in paragraph 24 of the paper, and I had noted that I think that's a really important point. We had interpreted that paragraph in that way, that it was examples of, but not a fully inclusive list. But I do think that that is important to note in the agenda decision, that that's the way that this paragraph is to be read. So for us, it confirmed that we had concluded. So overall, I agreed with where the staff got to. I wanted to maybe make a couple of observations as well. That was one of them. The other, and maybe this is a question, in paragraph 35 of the paper, it talks about the customer assessing whether it controls the right to the access of the software rather than whether it controls the underlying software. And I guess I wanted to maybe understand as if we assess that we don't control the software, then do we also have to assess, do we control the right to access the software? Like, do you have to do a two-step test? Perhaps that's being a little nitty-gritty, but there was a way that I think that could be read. So I don't, if that was the staff's intent, perhaps that needs to be called out a little bit. If it wasn't, then perhaps it was just in the way the wording was. Then, let's see. I think those were the two. So paragraphs 47 and 48 are the staff's conclusion. I think those are extremely helpful paragraphs. And so I think it's important to make sure that those concepts are clearly laid out in the tentative agenda decision. Perhaps it's already in there. But I those were very helpful paragraphs, at least as I was reading through the paper, to clarify the key points. And that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Bruce.
I'm probably going to get shot for my first comment, but I just wanted to say something on consistency. We're just talking about paragraph 24 that was brought up, where we're saying that the interpretation of words such as is for example. Yet in our previous paper, when paragraph 7 for cryptocurrency referred to such items, we said, no, that's a definitive list. So I'm just pointing out we're not being consistent. That's not the issue.
Do you need to go get the big gun?
I don't disagree with where the staff's got to, but I'll tell you what I do have a challenge with is how we got there, and I'll tell you why. We've kind of gone to the extremes again and said, well, yes, if I buy the software, it's mine, it's on my server, great. We clearly own something, whereas if we're outside, we're not. But if you look at software as a service, I mean, probably the majority of SaaS models at the moment work on options of offline, offline. Simple examples, Microsoft, the new Microsoft 365. I can either access it purely online or I can download it and use it on my computer. Are you saying that we're going to completely account for this differently? Because one I control is on my hardware and it's mine, yet Bonnie, who works for exactly the same organization as I do and under the same license agreement, may just choose to use the online version. So you've got to be careful. I mean, Netflix do the same. I can access Netflix online. I can download it onto a device. And then the majority of these things give you options where you can do it. So just be careful that the fact that somebody can download something, to me, is not the issue of control. Software is controlled in one simple way, and that's on licensing. How you can you turn off, can you turn off, is it expired? That is how software is controlled. It's the only way to control software. And if you think about it, whether it's offline or whether it's online, the way you establish control of a software is, what does the license let me do? Does it expire, or is there a way for them to switch it off? And so I'm just saying I agree with where we got to in terms of, yes, once you're in IS-38, I agree, and we can get there and all the exciting things. But an analysis, and we did mention it in the agenda session, I know we're not going to wording, but we did talk about the fact that, you know, for example, if you can download it on your server, I actually think that downloading is irrelevant. I mean, it'd be quite interesting if people talk about downloading and loading on CDs. I mean, how many computers around this table have actually still got CD-ROMs? They don't, because people can download and access all via cloud service. And I just think that's not a distinction I'd make. I would very heavily draw the distinction a lot more around the licensing is what is actually the control factor here, not the downloading of the software.
Young Sue.
Yeah, I think, you know, DeBruce told me what I was just trying to explain. I think he's talking about scenario one, downloading the software, so that the company has the right access to the software over the internet, I mean the cloud computing, as well as the right to hold the software himself on a CD-ROM. I don't think why those two rights. I just said two rights, right? The first one is the right to access to the software over the internet, and the other one is a right to access the software over the CD-ROM. I mean, just download it and has it. And I don't know why those two rights interact with each other. I mean, I don't know why downloading the software affects the controllability of the right to access to the software over the internet. You know, even though you have the software, still somebody else can access the software over the internet without my permission. Maybe IP is not a matter right here. I don't want to say anything about the IP, but, you know, I can control. I cannot control the software over the internet because anybody can access to that. So downloading a software doesn't seem to me a kind of a factor to decide whether we have the control over the software on the internet. So that is what I'm really confused. So I agree with all other scenarios, like scenario X, Z1, Z2, but scenario Y, maybe the US GAAP, Bob can help me with that, maybe. But, you know, I really don't understand why holding the software myself determines the control of the software over the internet.
Does staff want to respond to those questions?
Sorry, Michelle. Well, no, I would agree that I think that depending on the terms and conditions, you could review it as two different rights, the right of access and also potentially the ownership rights over the license.
And maybe I'll just go on to add to that to say that I can understand based on how, you know, our words that we talked about possessing a copy. So first of all, say we agree with what, by the way, you and Bruce have just said, that from our perspective, we didn't intend to imply that we thought whether you download or are sitting with a CD-ROM makes a difference in the control. To your point, Bruce, it's exactly about what can you do with the software. So as I say, I can understand how you thought we were distinguishing based on downloading or not, but I think it's not the download per se that would make the difference between your control. It's about what you can do with the software. So in your example, even if the case where you access it online, but it's exactly the same arrangement as if I had the CD-ROM copy, and I can do exactly the same things with that software in terms of using it and using it in different ways, then that's what matters, is, as you say, what I'm able to do with it and the decision-making I have around it. It's not about whether I've downloaded it.
So that's not what the word possess a copy means? Because I think that's what...
Exactly.
Yeah, potentially.
And just to let you, I mean, we can change the words if we need to, but that was just one for example that we were, I mean, some people could read, but it was just a for example we were giving, and we were hoping that the words that then went on to describe what the customer can do, you know, having the ability to use the copy as it wishes to obtain future economic benefits and prevent others, that was, you know, where there might be some informational value in it, but it could be that we need to think about changing, you know, possess a copy of. Maybe that's the confusing
part. We're getting confused, other people will. So. Yeah.
But I still believe it makes a difference, because if you can really download a software, you can run it independently of the access to the servers of the company. And you could also keep it running, although probably the software producer has already a new version online and is continuously developing the version, so that you have to adjust and to customize any time the software developer is developing further the software. Whereas when you really have a download copy, more or less it stays constant. Whether you keep it constant is on your own. For sure, there are certain risks related to that with regard to viruses and further on. But at least you are in a different scenario. So if you really have a downloaded copy, you can run it completely independent. Whereas if you use a cloud, and you only can use the cloud, depending on the software provider.
Can I just respond on that? I mean, the challenge with that, and I mean, I'll use an example most of you use, Microsoft Office 365. So you pay a subscription to Microsoft. In my organization, I've got people who purely use it online. They do not download it because they don't want it on their machines. I download and use it on my computer. The question to me is, what benefit do we as an entity get? And the benefit we get is exactly the same. We get the usage of the software. From a Microsoft point of view, what are they getting? They're getting the same license fee from me as it could be from Guy, whether he downloads it and I use the client. We're paying the same, we're getting the same benefit, and they're receiving the same license fee from us. And a lot of these software providers do that, where you've got those choices. So to me, we're focusing on, and it sounds strange, we try to focus on the physical thing for an intangible asset. Whether it's downloaded or not is not the issue. To me, it's what does the license give me access to do? That's,
do you want to respond?
Can I just challenge on that a little bit? If Guy downloads it and puts it on his computer, but you don't. You'd use it on the cloud, but you have the ability to, you're given the right to, I shouldn't say ability, you have the right to take possession of that and put it on your own computer. I'd agree, you're both in the same position, but I think what we're saying is treating them both the same, that you both have control of that software. Now, there's another program that's out there that I use that does some similar things, but it's a different software, and I cannot take that software, and I cannot download it. The only place I can use it is on the vendor's cloud. There, I see my control is different than what you guys had. You guys controlled the software. I don't, and so I don't think I think all I have in that case is a service.
But then what you're saying is, even if the service is on the cloud and we completely customize it, I mean, we go through 3 years of customization, you're saying I still can't capitalize it.
If I can't take it, I don't control it. It's about control.
So if you cannot have a copy of the software in-house, you cannot license it. You cannot recognize the intangible.
No, I
have. That's not what we're saying either. I mean, what we're saying is now you're getting to the level of customization. So if somebody writes a complete customized program for me, you can get this done. The firms who write a whole program, but they store it online.
But it's their program. They own the code. They own the software. All they do is they give me a right to access it on their servers. I don't think I control an asset.
Even if it's been custom built for me, but it's still running off their server.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's custom built. It's not about the feature. It's about control. What do I control?
And that's the licensing. That's what I'm saying to you.
So, Bob, if I understand, you're saying that it's important to you that you have the right to download it. Whether or not you actually do is another question. So you could have people making different decisions based on the same license, but the right to download it is important to you.
Because then I control.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
I'm sorry, only to confirm that's the notion we were trying to bring across, I think, about having, it's about, so right. I think I wasn't very clear. It's about having, if you're in the same position, having the same rights, then that's what it's about, and it's about having the right to be able to take that and do what you want with it.
Well, it's not what we've said here, though, because we speak all about the configuration and basic versus customized.
Well, that's now, paragraph 40, is that what you're looking at?
Yeah, well, I'll just look at the agendas here, but now we're mixing principles. Are we saying that the control at the moment is based on customization versus non-customization, or are we saying it's download versus non-download? Because whichever one we decide it is, we need to amend what we're saying in the agenda decision to reflect, because at the moment the agenda decision reflects both of those.
Right, and that's the point I was making before.
Oh, yeah.
So I think, and you know, this conversation, by the way, and conversations we had with some of you in advance has helped us notice that we think there's improvements. We could certainly make it to the end of the agenda. So I acknowledge that, and we thank you for this helpful feedback, which will continue.
So polite.
No, but it's true. It's true. I've written all over this. There's things we can do. So I think, to be clear, and again, Michelle, correct me if I'm wrong, is that... we didn't intend to imply, again, which I understand why you think it implied, that surely the difference in the significance of customization directly changes how much control a customer has or not. We, in paragraph 40, when we put that together, it's almost like I do an analogy, of course, to things that come more familiar to me. So I kind of think about the significance of you know, customer-specific sort of changes being made, kind of like risks and rewards in the assessment of control in IFRS 10. So it's like the more customization that's done, it's an indicator that maybe I might want to look more closely, because if there's lots of customer-specific, you know, configuration done, chances are, as the customer, I've had to pay a lot more from that, chances are it's pretty important to my business and my operations, and therefore chances are in the rights that I've got, I'll have wanted to obtain rights that mean, you know, I want to make sure the supplier can't take that away from me, and I have, you know, a right to possess it and do what I want with it, in a sense. But it's only an indicator. So apologies to imply this. So we don't think the significance of customization in and of itself would say I have any more or less control. It's just the more specific configuration that's an indicator that you may have then structured your, you know, your rights and what you get in a way that says.
I'd be very interested to see the comments we get on this, because I think making the distinction, the fact that you can download or not, is just from, I mean, we do IT development. There is, believe me, whether you download my software, whether you got the rights or not, would not, to me, impact whether you control the software we develop for you or not.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Carl.
Yes, thanks. I just say I'm comfortable with the staff's analysis and the wording in the agenda decision.
Okay, thank you.
Nothing to amend.
Thank you very much. Reinhard?
So I agree with the staff analysis. Some of my comments are similar to what others have said. I think it's important for us to clearly articulate in the agenda decision why we're in the scope of IS 38 versus IFRS 16 and bring that out more than the agenda decision does right now. But to the discussion that we just were having, I think, was similar to the comments I had, in the sense that it's to me, what's really critical is not only obtaining the benefits, but the right to or the ability to restrict the access of others. So even if you have significantly customized software, if the supplier can take that software and license it to somebody else, well, then you haven't really restricted your access to that. To that software, potentially. So there's a number of factors where I think would suggest you need to consider carefully. There may be indicators one way or the other, but you need to step through carefully and measure it against those criteria in IS 38. You know, do you have benefits, and can you restrict the access of others?
Okay.
Guy. I'm struggling with paragraph 35 versus the analysis in paragraphs 38 and 40. Right now, if I read 34 and 35 together, we seem to be saying it is not the underlying software that we need to have. It's not the underlying software, but that's the underlying resource that is focused on in the definition of control. It's something else that we're looking at here. But then when we step through paragraph 38 and 40 in assessing control, it very much seems to look at the underlying software. And I was torn on what it was trying to say, and as a result, I couldn't really formulate in my own mind how to assess scenario Z2. And what are the important factors in scenario Z2 that are going to lead me to an intangible asset conclusion versus a service conclusion? I couldn't crisply find in here what I was trying to assess, when 35 seems to say it's not the underlying software, it's something else. Yet the focus in these paragraphs seem to very much be directed at the underlying software. So you know, part of me was thinking about 38 and 40, and the discussion in there was more focused on, do I actually even have a license? Or is this just a service arrangement? And then, you know, once I establish I have a license, a right to use the software, then I assess whether I control that license, and that's going to be a pretty easy answer if I have contractual rights to that license. But it seemed to be mixing, you know, do I have a license, and how do I assess control? We're all kind of muddled together, and so I couldn't take away a crisp understanding of how I would analyze scenarios Z2 in here. The result for scenario X and the result for scenario Y and the result for scenario Z1 seemed perfectly fine to me. The roadmap to them was a bit muddled in my view. And Z2, I could not figure out how to analyze Z2 based on the way we had laid it out here.
Mm-hmm. Your comments feel like they've got a similar flavor to Bertrand's to me. Andrew.
I agree with some of where the paper gets to. However, I went, like a number of people I think have, between the right to control access and the right to control the underlying software. And that rather took me back to the overall definition of control in IS 38, which Reinhard, I think, was referring to, where it's not just the ability to get future economic benefits, but to restrict the access of others to that resource. And that rather made me think that what we're really talking about here is not whether you control right to access, because you're always going to have access to the software. It's whether you have exclusivity in relation to that bit of software or whether you don't. Because if you don't, and the supplier can use that software for anyone he likes, then that says to me that I don't have an asset. If I've got something where I'm the one that has exclusive access to that software, I decide when it's going to be used and how it's going to be used, and no other customer can use that software, then that seems to me to be control, and I feel like I've got an asset there. Now, that's a slightly different analysis from the one that's in the paper, and it, in fact, in scenario Z, wouldn't make a distinction between Z1 and Z2, although I would agree very much that the degree to which you've got configuration which is unique to a particular customer is likely to be very persuasive in pushing you towards a view that actually it's seems pretty likely if it's customized completely for that customer, customer software. Where I think that also takes you is that I, like others, don't think it matters whether you can download the software or not, because I don't think it's a question of being able to download, although it's a clear indicator that I can download something and I've got it. But it seems to me that the test is more, do I have control over the underlying software which is being hosted? And that then means that, let's say I'm just using a fairly generic bit of software, but I'm the only customer who uses that bit of software that service is providing, maybe slightly artificial, but just to illustrate, and that supplier is prohibited from letting any other customer use that software, I'd say that's mine, even though it's generic. So I think it's perhaps a slightly different analysis that, do I have control under the definition in IS 38? And it takes you in a slightly different direction. I think it gets you broadly the same answers, but not quite. I think that's all I had to say in the paper. So we're doing the agenda decision wording in a minute, are we?
We're not doing it yet. Fine.
Just on what Andrew said, I'm not sure that exclusivity is something to consider when you assess whether you control an IP or not. Let's depart from the software. Let's go still for the film. The model is always to sell an exclusivity. always. But still, when you buy on your TV channel, you buy a right to broadcast a film. You have exclusivity and the right to broadcast a film for a certain period of time on a specific jurisdiction or a number of broadcastings. But still, you don't control the underlying master copyright film. And this is really what matters. And it has nothing to do with exclusivity or non-exclusivity. And it's the same for IFRS 15. So exclusivity is not the key element to analyze, to assess whether you control an underlying IP or not. I would be rather on the same page as I thought on this.
Well, I think in practice I've seen some people that with an exclusive jurisdictional use of IP have viewed that as being an asset. But exactly which kind of asset is another question.
Okay, Tony?
Probably don't have much to say beyond what folks have already said. I, like Reinhardt, I think it comes back to a question of control in accordance with IS 38, and it seems to me that there is a distinction between something that is my asset and something that a supplier is using to deliver a service to me. And I'm not, so for that reason, I wasn't persuaded that the degree of configuration made much difference. It might be an indicator if it's highly configured or highly customized, but not, I wouldn't have found that persuasive, because I think my supplier could build something that was highly customized but to deliver a service to me and not transfer control of it. So I think it is important to focus on the control. I think, and then I probably look at it a bit more like Bob and Bertrand, and that's the way that I would have thought about it.
Okay, thank you. Giving IS 38 a real workout today, aren't we? Goro.
Yeah. Honestly speaking, this is very highly technical agenda for me, but from a user's point of view, that the customization or configuration, highly customized software, even though it is provided through internet or whatsoever, you know, that this kind of customization is so prevalent, I believe. And the sheer fact that the customization is so significant would limit the access from others. And also, I doubt if the vendor can sell this customized products to others, simply because that this is so customized to some organization. So I support the staff analysis, and I do believe that the staff conclusion appears to be most faithfully represents the transactions and thus provide more relevant information to users without damaging comparability and verifiability as well as understandability. And also I would appreciate that your consideration of the US GAAP, you know, because of this kind of transaction, I believe that it has become quite global and universal. Therefore, you know, from the user's point of view, that some kind of, you know, convergence, or I should say that the similar, you know, the accounting, how to account that same transaction in the same way is extremely important. Thank you.
Reinhardt, did you want to come back in again? No? I think Bob was next, and then Martin. So Bob?
I just wanted to make one more point on this point that we've been talking about, control. I think control is an economic concept that we should be applying consistently. And we've been talking about, and I agree with respect to IS 38 and control, and do you control an asset? But I think we also have to remember there's the other side of the transaction, and that's the vendor. And we've got an IFRS 15 model that's based on control. And so is the vendor giving up control over an asset, transferring control of an asset to somebody else. And then, yes, if yes, then they should have an asset. If not, then they should. I would be kind of troubled by magic accounting, where the vendor doesn't transfer control of any asset, but the customer recognizes an asset, magically recognizes an asset.
We did that in leasing.
Different leases, Bob. There's different leases.
You got me flabbergasted now. Yes.
Martin.
I guess with regard to control, what's the difference between Linux and Microsoft? One can be used free by the public, the other not. So if I can more or less restrict a user group, then each individual user, in a way, has control, although the intangible asset can split and share also to other ones. The second topic is, again, on this download issue. Consider you have downloaded the software, and on the other hand, you are using cloud computing, and now the company went bankrupt. If you have the software downloaded, you are in a completely different situation than you are in cloud computing. So you can still run your software, whereas in the other case, probably if there is no successor or so, it's done. It's over.
Young Su?
I want to come back to scenario one again. the one of the face of the controllability is the ability to restrict the others. And if you just think about that, there is a software in the internet provided by the vendor. And even though you have a downloaded version of the software, you cannot restrict the other people at all. You cannot restrict the access of the other people onto the software on the internet. So in that sense, you don't have a control over the software on the internet. So there could be a lot of the counter arguments about whether the downloaded version, possession of the downloaded version of actually control of the accessibility on the internet.
Okay. It's good to know the fire alarm doesn't work in the boardroom, but staff must have arranged that.
So my point is if I just summarize that, if you think about just one facet of the controllability, the restriction of the accessibility to the software itself.
Fire alarm controller.
The fact you have the software itself doesn't affect the ability to restrict the other people to access the software on the internet.
Sorry, Young Su, it's a false alarm apparently. So,
do you want me to repeat again?
Full attention.
I'm repeating three times.
Yeah, sorry.
So simply
simultaneously help IFRS and stay alive.
All right. I'm just thinking about the ability to restrict the other people from accessing to the software on the internet. If you just think about it, the fact that you have the downloaded version of the CD, downloaded version.
Maybe no.
Sorry, no, apparently it's the burglar alarm that's going off. Hopefully we get it silenced quickly.
Who breaks any steel stairs?
That's fine, I can do it later. Do you want me to do it again?
I'm sorry.
Okay. Let me make it as sure as possible. Accessibility, the ability to restrict the others. Let's just think about that, the other aspect of the controllability. Then the software in the internet, for that you cannot restrict the other peoples from accessing to the software on the internet, even though you have a copy of the software by yourself in the form of CD-ROM. So in that sense, CD-ROM, possession of the software on a CD-ROM is not relevant to the accessibility, the control to the access to the software on the internet. So now I understand.
That's
it,
a fair
right?
point. Okay. You could have situations, I think, where the accessibility even on the cloud is limited to particular people under the licensing arrangements. But yes, you're right, it's not determinative at that point. Okay, so
So when Bruce asked me before about wording on the agenda decision, I said not yet. So what I wanted to do, I guess, Petrina, is shall we see whether it's possible to sum up where we are at to talk about whether we can work on an agenda decision, and that may mean that we need to work on the words circulated and then discuss the specific words tomorrow if we're going to modify it, or whether we need to do some more analysis and bring it back. So maybe do you want to see if we can agree on where we've landed and whether that's enough to work with now or not?
Well, I will try to summarise a combination, because, by the way, this has been a very helpful discussion for us as well. So I'm going to try and summarise thoughts about where we've landed. I'm looking at Joan and Michelle because I definitely want them to add to what I say, just to make it clearer or not. And then, yeah, then you can see, you can say whether what I've summarised makes any sense or not, or whether we need to do something else. So I think the basic question around this was about fees I've paid for rights to access. And I think that having, by the way, heard all this helpful discussion, it's almost like the right to access in its very basic concept, which is why I think, you know, we fell out and said, look, for the vast majority, we think of these contracts that are just rights to access. We think from the customer's perspective and vendors, the sellers, you'd say these are service contracts. And I think the reason for that is just a right of access means that that's all you've got as a customer. What you've got, what the contract gives you, is a right to access the supplier software that it is constantly continuing to maintain over time, and you've got no ability as the customer to take anything and restrict others' access, do things with it. So I think that without any other words, actually a contract that is just for a right to access the supplier software that it's maintaining and ongoing, that's why we all agreed that that's where you end up with a service contract, because you don't obtain an intangible asset that gives you anything you control. Now, I think maybe where it's gotten, we got maybe confused in the paper, is sometimes those contracts that on the whole look like they're just rights to access may also or may have a piece in there that I might use the words that say give you a right to use, you know, a piece of the software, a copy of the software, or, you know, it gives you a right to use the software such that you can just use it. You have exclusive use of, you know, maybe just one copy of what's replicated elsewhere, but and therefore you do meet the control aspect. So a basic right of access, that's not where you get anything, but maybe as part of the agreement, including in the scenario Z2 analysis or in other ways, it may be the case that you obtain something. You've got that right to possess almost, you know, supplier software as it exists at that point in time, and take it, to Martin's words, and do what you, you know, do what you want with it in order to get economic benefits out of it, and in the process restrict others' access to whatever you're right, you know, whatever you've got. And in that situation, then you have potentially something that is an intangible asset, like this scenario Y situation. And that's kind of the same. And in saying whether, you know, in the analysis, do we think we've just analysed the X and the Y and we've not analysed the Z, I think that would be the basic framework. It's like almost the Z scenario isn't something different, because we agree we shouldn't have implied the significance of customization means you have any, you know, more or less sort of control of something. It's just what you're always looking for in the agreement. Is it just a basic right of access to something the supplier is controlling and maintaining and updating? Or is there perhaps part of this agreement where I actually have got almost a right of use, got something that I can put my hands around that only I... That I can control.
And then if we were to focus on that, if the committee agrees with that, what would we be saying about what you need to think about to determine which of those two camps that you're in?
So I'm not sure, and again, I'm looking at my colleagues. So I'm not sure the overall... And I think the words would potentially change, you know, a bit in the tentative agenda decision.
I'm not the question hugely. Of possession... would yes. be one we'd need to be clear what we do or don't mean.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and so I think the basics, so I think that, for example, if I picture, we kind of set out what was, so we think if you just get a right of access and we used words about basic configuration, I think we take that. I think we'd have roughly the same analysis with some better words, I think, to say, look, if you've just got a right of access, and maybe we'd explain a bit better how and why we think in that situation, it's a service contract, you know, you haven't got anything and it's just accessing what the supplier is fully controlling and maintaining. So it wouldn't be very different from what's in there other than more refined.
You'd have to make the
words.
Indicator aspect more clear.
We possibly don't even want to go there on the modification being an indicator. I don't know, that'll be open to suggestion. I think on the other side, whether we use, I mean, we can use the phrase, you know, this notion of a right to possess, maybe taken away from a cup. We could either think about the notion of a right to use, a right to possess. Maybe that phrasing isn't what is most important, as some of the words that I think are already in there that talk about, you know, when do we think you have something is when we think as the customer you have the ability to use to make decisions about that thing that you've got.
That might be where the difference between right of access and right of use might be, would be whether you can direct how it's used.
Yeah.
And so customization may or may not actually be much of an indicator, because the vendor could customize it hugely for your type of organization, but it would still be very much in control of how it's used. Mm-hmm. And so it, you could just put in some words about the ability to direct the use of it, decide how it's used.
Because that takes away the issue of customization, takes away the issue of download or not.
The ability
and
to
that's
direct
what we
say. The use.
I think Lana said it's that issue of control.
Would the committee agree with allowing the lucky staff to take away the tentative agenda decision overnight and to see if we can recraft the words and bring it back tomorrow, because we've got the benefit of a two-day meeting this time. We can have a look at it. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll then conclude that we can't all get comfortable there, but at least we can try. Would the committee agree with, staff, asking the staff to do that?
We are happy.
Yes, people are nodding, nobody objecting. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. You give staff permission to do some work. Okay, and if it doesn't work, then we can bring it back. But let's try in the first instance, because I'm not sure we're a million miles apart, but I think the articulation is going to be a little bit tricky, so we'll see. Thank you.